Okay, so I think we're going to go ahead and get started. Welcome everyone to today's workshop, Experiencing the 12 Traditions in Daily Living, presented by the South Bay Intergroup of Overeaters Anonymous. My name is Janice. I'm a compulsive overeater and the special events chair for the South Bay Intergroup. We do have everyone set to mute, just to minimize distractions during the workshop. If you're joining by phone, just remember that *6 will mute or unmute you, and also *9, you can use *9 to raise your hand. Well, those of you who wish, please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Thank you. So I just want to thank Luann for being our speaker today. I also want to thank Claudia for volunteering to assist with this workshop. I am so grateful for you both and just looking forward to Luann sharing her experience, strength, and hope with us today. To get us started, I've asked Claudia to read the OA preamble.
Okay, I'm Claudia, I'm a compulsive eater. OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. And Janice, I have a question for you. I set the little thing to ding when people come in. Is that too distracting? Do you want me to turn that off?
No, that's fine. Okay. Thank you. Okay, thank you, Claudia. So can I ask someone to read the 12 steps? So Claudia, do you have that up? Do you have that, the 12 steps? You're muted.
I can bring that up.
Okay.
Want me to share it?
Yes, please. No, just read it.
Oh, okay. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and, when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you, Claudia. So I just want to go over a couple just things of Zoom etiquette. I'm sure we all know how to be on Zoom. We've done it enough over the past year. I know I have, certainly. But I just like to mention, if you're walking, eating, or doing anything distracting during the workshop, please turn your camera off. We ask that you keep yourself muted specifically while the speaker is sharing. Chat is available. I think I have that on. So you can chat, but if it gets too much, we'll turn that off. There will be time for shares and or questions. We ask that you use the raise your hand feature on the participants tab, and we will call on you and unmute you at that time. As a reminder, the suggested donation for this workshop is $5. There's a link in the chat, or will be shortly, that will take you to the South Bay Intergroup website where you can make your donation. When you make your donation on the website, please put the name, you can just put traditions in the notes section so that your so that your donation is recorded accordingly for the workshop. And so now, without further ado, I am so happy to introduce Luann, who is our speaker for today. And she and I have talked a lot about this workshop, so I am excited for all of us today. And so, Luann, take it away.
Oh my gosh, thank you. Okay, full disclosure, this is my first workshop ever that I've done, and I'm very nervous. So I'm gonna ask that we do a moment of silence, maybe a minute of meditation, just so I can get centered and get my nervies out. So do a moment of a minute of meditation. I'm gonna time us. Okay. So now that's done, centered. So I'm going to qualify. This is how I'm planning to do the workshop. So I'm going to spend 7-10 minutes just qualifying and sharing my experience a little bit of how I got into the traditions, and then. I'll talk about three traditions, and then, you know, tradition one, two, and three, and then we'll go to a Q&A or sharing session, you know, for like 10, 15 minutes, and then I'll do another three, and then we'll do another question and sharing until the end. So it's pretty straightforward. So I'm using the 12 and 12, the second edition book. So to qualify first is, I'm Luann, I'm a compulsive overeater. And I guess I should have said that first. June 1st was my 5-year birthday of being abstinent. And so, what was it like? I lost you guys. Hang on a second. There you are. I'm trying to juggle multiple screens here. So what it was like before a program, and the bedevilments, that was me, you know, the bedevilments from the big book. So having trouble with personal relationships. Yes. You know, couldn't control my emotional natures. Yes, I was always having, I was very angry. I had emotional outbursts that would just come on all of a sudden, and I would be like, where the hell did that come from? I have depression, You know, we are prey to misery and depression. Yes, check. I have depression. I am on medication for it, been on it for about 20 years. I couldn't make a living. That one, I could make a living, but I had trouble with my jobs. I have more jobs. I stayed in the same field, but I had a lot of jobs because I had relationship problems in my jobs. And so therefore it was easier to move than try to deal with the relationships. So feelings of uselessness, check. Had that since I was a little girl. And I was always full of fear. That's another bedevilment. And I was always unhappy. I was happy, but there was always a part of me that wasn't happy with myself. I always thought I could do better. And I never felt like I could be really a big help to anybody. And so when I finally got to the point where I knew I needed help, my relationships and my family of origins have gone down to the lowest of low. My mom had disinherited me. And I wasn't talking to anybody in my family. The only one that I had my husband and my son, and I was just eating constantly. My stomach hurt. My solution was to eat more. You know, I have stomach pain, eat more. I have emotional pain, eat. You know, physical pain, eat. I just eat, you know. My top weight was over 191. I did not weigh myself after that because that's how much I weighed when I had my son. And I said I was never going to weigh that much again. And I did without being pregnant. And so I stopped weighing myself. So I don't know how high I got, you know, probably over 220, over the 200 range. But anyways, so I walked into the rooms, I knew I had relationship issues and I knew I was eating over them. And so when I walked into the rooms, June 1st, 5 years ago, and I sat down, I was finally around people who thought like me, who ate like me and felt like me. I felt like I was at home. And so I heard about the allergy of the body, from the big book and how, you know, I couldn't stop eating once I started. I'm like, God, that, you know, I have an allergy. So I have to stop eating sugar so I don't trigger that allergy. And boom, it stopped. I haven't had any sugar or flour since. So most of my program, I'm going to say 95% of my program is around my emotions. I really strongly believe in my emotional sobriety. I work a really strong program around that because if I'm not emotionally sober, I'm going to go eat because that's my first thought. You know, even today I was anxious about it. And I'm like, I'm going to eat my lunch at 11. You know, because my first solution is to eat. And then I'm like, I had to keep distracting myself because I knew it was too early. So anyway, so here I am 5 years later. About 3 years ago, no, it was two and a half years ago, my sponsor and I decided to work the traditions. And so January 1st, we did a paragraph a day out of this book. For the traditions, and we wrote on it and shared via email what our thoughts were about it. And it's kind of a God thing that because each tradition only took a month. And as soon as January was done, we were done with the tradition one. And then we jumped into January of, you know, tradition two. And it worked out. I mean, I'm sure whoever wrote this book, the many, many wonderful people who participated and didn't plan on a paragraph a month for a whole year, and the book ended exactly at a year. It was amazing. And so we did that for a whole year, and it changed my life and changed my relationships that I have with my family and the relationship I have with myself, because it gives me the traditions. So the steps gave me the ability to take responsibility for my behavior and my part in everything in my relationships. And the traditions gives me the manual on how to have relationships. It's just, and so that first year when we did this tradition work, I had so much going on with my mom, my son and his wife. These are the people I'm going to use examples for. One with my mom and then my son and his fiance, then they're now married, were moving in with us because they were going to be homeless. And I'm like, how the hell am I going to manage, these young kids? They're not young, they're in their early 20s, and still maintain my abstinence and sanity and still try to have a relationship with them when this is all over. Because my thought was like, oh my God, they're going to move in and we're going to blow up and they're going to move out and we'll never ever talk to each other again. But the traditions helped that. And I will give examples of how that helped. They've moved out in November. We're still talking. We still have a loving, caring, healthy relationship because of these traditions. And so that's the experience I want to share with everybody today. And so with that, I'm going to get started. Okay. I'm timing myself too, you guys. So, okay. So let me close that out. Okay. So tradition one. Okay. Start. Tradition one. Our common welfare should come first. Our personal recovery depends on OA unity. The spiritual principle is unity. So what I did is I read the first paragraph and the last paragraph for this workshop. I read the first paragraph and the last paragraph of each tradition. And then this is what I heard. So many of us prefer to be alone and isolated so we can eat without interference. It became progressively difficult for us to connect with other people. Our desires to live free of compulsive overeating has forced us to change these attitudes. In OA, we find acceptance, a sense of belonging, and unity with other compulsive overeaters that food could never satisfy. And the first tradition of unity reminds us the importance of truth, that we are not alone. We are connected to our fellow human beings. Our emotional and spiritual health depends on on the health of our relationships. So here in the local groups, in their sponsorship roles and intergroup and region assemblies and the OA worldwide, we are learning to connect with other people in ways that nurture us and help us recover together. So that's what I heard in those first two things. So when my sponsor and I did this tradition study, I broke it down to what does that mean for me in OA, and how can I apply it in with my family and friends? And then how do I apply it to my spiritual community? And you're probably wondering, well, what the hell is that? So I had the shitty committee, the voices, the thoughts, I get, I don't know about everybody else, but I have a committee that goes on in my head, and I called it the shitty committee. And they were the really loud, obnoxious voices that were very critical and shaming and guilty, and I'm not good enough. And so I don't know, when I was doing this, it got popped in my head, well, what about this committee? I got to start working on this committee too. And so I changed the name of this committee from shitty committee to spiritual committee. And I closed the shitty committee meeting down, and I reopened it to a new meeting, because I visualized that I was sitting in a room with all these little voices, have little chairs, and we're all sitting in a circle. And I needed to open it up to some more loving and caring voices. And so that's why I changed the name to spiritual committee. You can call it intergroup, or you can call it, anything that's positive, that's going to invite love and kindness in. And when I talk about these, those are the three different places we're going to focus on: the meetings, the family and friends, and then the spiritual committee. So unity, when I first joined OA, I didn't know what unity meant. I didn't understand it. I didn't understand our common work felt comes first. All I heard is my recovery has to come first. That I have to come first, because I didn't know how to share. I didn't know how to be of service. It was just about me, 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 me. So OA, the meeting level, has taught me to be, there's a balance between unity, which is what's the best thing for the whole group as a whole, and autonomy for me individually, what's the best thing for me individually. But I can't have recovery in OA unless there's meetings. So I have to make the unity of OA as a whole come first so that I can have personal recovery. And that's what this tradition is about. And it took me a while to learn how important it is to look at the whole welfare of OA, and so that I can be healthy. So that's what I take away from that. So when it comes to my family and friends, oh my God, it's already, my time is going by faster than I want it to. Anyways, so when it comes to my family and friends, especially my relationships with my husband first, is like, I had to look at my whole relationship with him and what's important. We're a group, it's not him against me. For the longest time, it was like, I got to keep my autonomy. I got to be independent. I got to do what I want to do, and, you know, screw you. But it's now I look at, you know, what's the best thing for us as a group. And I get to use my mom for an example with this too, because my mom and I have always had a little headbutting relationship. And one day she asked, this was the first month, remember January first month, she asked if she could move in with me. No, you know, but that's what I wanted to say. But I was like, no, what unity? I'm working on unity this month. So I was like, Mom, and this is what I finally told her, and this was a God thing, is that, you know what? I want us, what's our common bond, Mom? And, you know, I see it as that we want to have a healthy relationship. So if you moving in here isn't going to bring unity to our relationship, would you agree? And she said, yeah. I said, so what can we do to unify our relationship without breaking it down? And so it was such a loving, kind way for me to say no to my mom instead of using the F word and hanging up and running away. And I got the language from this book. And so she didn't move in, but the next month, I will tell you in February what happened next. I'm going to add 2 more minutes. I might have to start talking a little faster. So how does this work in my spiritual committee? Is that I kind of changed the wording. It says my common welfare comes first. Personal recovery depends on unity with myself. I need to have unity with myself. I need to find peace. And I need to listen to the committee in my head, not the shitty committee, but my spiritual committee. And so what I did is I started listing all the voices I heard in my head, and I made sure I added. So example, you know, I guilty, peace, shame, you know, not good enough. I made each one of those feelings an entity. And then, you know, then I realized I didn't have any peace or trust or love or God in that committee. So I started adding those into the chairs and, you know, my visualization. And then I would go talk to them when I had a problem and ask each one of them and I did a lot of writing, and I asked each one of them to tell me what they're thinking from their perspective. It made me feel crazy, but it worked. I started feeling some love and support for myself and some unity. And so, okay, so that's tradition one. Okay, let's go on to tradition two. So tradition two is the spiritual principles trust. For our group purpose, which is unity, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience, and our leaders are but trusted servants. So who's in charge? You know, a loving God as he expresses himself in our group conscience. And this, so who's in charge? A loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. This may seem thoroughly impractical, but it works. When faced with challenges or problems, we ask for God's guidance. We discuss the matter carefully and trust the decision we each reach together with our higher power. And most people are willing to cooperate when they, when helping to make a decision. And anger and bitterness are often replaced by harmony and peace when we treat each other with respect and really listen to what everyone has to say. And I love this. Again, when I first joined OA, I didn't understand what a group conscious was. But, you know, over the years of being part of, you know, everyday meetings and part of intergroup, and now I'm part of the region board, we take time and we make sure when we're at our board meetings, everybody has a say. And that's what group conscience is. It's just not the loud voices, you know, there's always a few loud people in the meetings that you always hear. They're always stepping up, and some of them are annoying, let's be honest. And it's always those quiet ones that never get heard. But group conscious, this allows us to make sure those quiet voices gets heard. And so, and then we get to take our vote after that. And then whatever that vote is, then that's God's will. And I love that. And in my family and friends, how it's helped me is that I used to be very controlling. I still might be, I don't know, you know, but I hopefully if I've improved my relationships enough where I'm willing to listen to what other people's opinions are before decisions are made, and it has helped. And so an example of this is in February, my mom wanted to go look at an assisted living facility. And so my husband and I went out to Alabama, where she lived, to take her to Louisiana so she could see this assisted living facility. And my mom's really good at blaming and making everything my fault, or I always felt like way. So during this whole family time, my aunt and uncle were there too. She had to make a decision, and she wanted all of us to make a decision for her. And I was not going to do it. I'm like, no, we're going to have a group conscience. Now, I didn't use these words with them, but that's what I was thinking. And so I gave my opinion, and then that was it. I didn't, you know, I just let her, everybody did that. I don't know how it managed, but everybody gave their opinions and she made that decision. And it was such a beautiful situation, because the next month after she moved there, she, why did you leave me here? Why did you put me in here to die? And I said, and I was honestly could say, Mom, you made that decision. Because we sat and we all discussed it, but you ultimately made the decision. And it was such a beautiful, you know, using the group conscious, I didn't have to feel blamed. I didn't have to feel guilty. In the past, I would have, because I would have been the one dictating her what to do. And it would have come back on me, but I didn't have to do it that time. And it's like, oh, thank God for the traditions, you know, that tradition too, because it freed me up from guilt. It freed me up from blame and freed me up from beating myself up, because I didn't have to, because I was open and willing to have a group conscious and let her make her decisions. So, So how does this work in with the spirit, my spiritual committee? And this is where, you know, I need to make sure I hear those quiet voices, because it's the loud ones, the guilt, the shame, the not good enough, they're fearful. And those are the ones I always hear. But there's always those quiet voices, which I believe is my higher power, which is love and kindness and caring and compassion and God, you know. So when I work on my spiritual community, I write everybody who's going to be down, who's showed up, because every meeting's different. Just like when we go to OA meetings, there's not always the same people that show up. There's always a few, but there's always a few new ones, and some old ones come and go, and the same thing happens in the spiritual committee. So I write everybody who's there, and I make sure love and peace and kindness is there. And then I go back, and I write from each persona about what's going on, whatever the issue is. And then I make sure God has the last word. And, you know, I don't carry as much guilt and shame around as I used to, because I'm giving everybody a voice. I'm listening to all parts of me. And it's been really a beautiful experience to start growing in that, and liking myself. You know, I didn't think I was ever going to be able to do that. So anyway, so that is tradition 2. Let's see, let me go to tradition 3. Whoops, hang on a second, sorry. I did the wrong thing. Okay, tradition 3. Okay. Let me cancel that and start over. Okay, tradition 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. And a spiritual principle is identity. And so most organizations have a list of requirements for membership. No one is barred from OA who has a desire to stop eating compulsively. We come from many different differences from our political opinions, race, lifestyle, sexual orientation, religion, and economic status. No one is ever overweight or too underweight to be part of this group. And the only requirement is desire to stop eating. Applying tradition 3, we find a treasure of friendship with people who we would have excluded from our lives. When we have an open heart, it is here in OA, many of us find our first experience of unconditional acceptance. We have welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, welcome home. I love that saying, because, you know, my first day, I'm like, I am at home. It was just such a wonderful thing. So, and I never felt accepted until OA, you know, all through my family and friends, I always felt like I had, you know, I had my guard up and no one really knew me. But OA really gave me that opening of feeling like I was home. So, and the one thing I love about this, this tradition too, is when sponsees and sponsorship and food plans and everything, no one, you know, this the tradition 3 doesn't say you have to do the steps. Tradition 3 doesn't say you have to eat a certain way. Tradition 3 doesn't say you have to give up sugar and flour. Tradition 3 just says you have to have a desire to stop eating compulsively. And so there's no shame. If someone wants to just come in and sit in the rooms and just listen and not work the steps, that's okay. They identify with it and that's their path, that's okay. If someone wants to weigh and measure their food and that works for them, but it doesn't work with someone else, that's okay. Because this just brings such acceptance, thank you. I'm getting too fast, let me slow down. Slow down the way I'm, just, it's that unconditional acceptance. And that's the first thing I got when I came into this program. So how does this work for family and friends? So again, I kind of tweak the verbiage a little. Is the only requirement for a relationship is a desire to be part of the relationship. that's how it translates to me. If I want to be like my mom and I, even though we always butted heads, we both had a desire to have a relationship with each other. So that was the only requirement. So we don't know why. We got mad at each other a lot. We've both said things to each other I know I've said things to my mom I'm not proud of, but I can say that I've always had a desire to have a relationship with her. And that's all that was that mattered, that, you know, that was the only thing important. So, and so now it's been great because this past couple of years, our relationship really has changed. And I have a lot more compassion and kindness towards her. She's old and she's actually on hospice now, and bless her heart. It pains me that she's in Louisiana alone, but I know she's getting well taken care of. So the other person, I have a new family member because my son got married. And so again, I had to, I love her. But the only, I've been blessed that I like the person my son decided to marry. But even if I didn't like her, she is going to be part of the family, that she's part of it. And I have to accept that as it is. And so, because to not identify with her and let her come into the family would be to push my son away. And that's not what I wanted. And so my son had a desire for her to be part of our family. And so then I'm gonna identify with that. So that's how I use this tradition in my family. So, so how about my spiritual committee? Oh, I forgot to time myself. I just realized, I forgot to time myself. Hold on, I'll just keep on going. My spiritual committee. So the only requirement of being part of Luann is showing up to the committee meetings. So if guilt or shame or not good enough is showing up, then they're part of me. And so how I need to work with them and work on identifying with them and why they're coming. Why is these voices being so critical? And as I worked with these voices and pulling in the loving ones too, the critical voices really wanted the best for me. They just didn't know how to do it in a loving, kind way. And so when I started looking at the loving, kind voices, it started getting a little more cohesive. So learning to identify with those voices because they are part of me, instead of trying to push them down, push them away, ignore them, eat over them because I don't want to listen to them. That just brings discord. So I had to, they're part of me. I had to identify with them. So that's it for the first three traditions. So now I'd like to open it up for 15 minutes of either questions, or if you guys want to share 3-minute shares, that would be great. So why don't we start with raising our hands? Okay, Dorothy.
Thank you, Luann. I appreciate your insight and your stick-to-itiveness so much. That was just dynamite. I especially identified with the part where those members of your spiritual committee that on the first sight seemed to be negative, like fear or ego or shame or whatever, that they really might have something positive to say. I've labeled those things, those voices in my head as being negative, and, you know, like I said, so eat to shut them up. But sometimes that element of fear is really trying to help me and protect me. They're trying to give me, it might be trying to give me some valuable information. I just have to be calm enough to listen and not retaliate against it, but listen to the love that might be coming from the other side of it. And I really appreciated that. that perspective, because it's all coming from inside of me. So I know all the parts of me want the best for me. It's just that sometimes it comes out in a scary way. So thank you for doing this. Appreciate you, Lynette.
Thank you. Oh, Lynn.
Hi, everybody. My name is Lynn, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And Luann, thank you so much for doing this today. You're doing great. I was particularly the itty bitty shitty committee is something that I heard years ago from someone I knew in 12-step before I had been, and I knew exactly what they were talking about, which should have been that foreboding of like, oh yeah, you know, you might be a compulsive eater if you completely relate to the itty bitty shitty committee. But one of the things that really jumped out at me is that unity, and thank you for the illustrations of that this, all of this is about all of my relationships, right? All my work relationships, and especially when I'm in service for the fellowship, is about keeping us together and being in unity, like, and especially like my family, you know. And it's easy with the ones I'm closest to really get spun out the most and want to be able to tell them what to do. And if you just did what I said, this wouldn't be happening right now, you know? And what a relief to be able to let people have that autonomy, that I'm just here to support. It seems like this is what you're asking that you need from me. Am I right about that? You know, the exchange with everything, with the intention of unity. And I just really appreciated it. And I need to remember that I'm not on my own, right? And that's the separateness of the ego that says I have to handle the omnipotence of I must handle everything myself. I can't trust anybody. People don't understand where I'm coming from. And that is all that committee. And to remember that I have all these, this other much more effective committee is, God, help me set aside everything I think I know for an open-minded and new experience in this situation, with this person, with this new task that I'm not familiar with, and all of my relationships. Because I go into every relationship with people I know as though it's always going to be the same. This is the way it was yesterday. And so that's what it's going to be like this time. And I'm telling you, when I can just put that aside, I'm blown away by the stuff that happens that has nothing to do with me. And it isn't look, I did this, therefore this all happens. It just opens up the universe, I think. And in particular, I have a person that's a colleague, if you will. And I was frustrated and I was getting into that. Man, she never, right? Never gets back to me. And I go into my building my case, and then it's like, oh, can you help me set aside everything I think I know about this person so we can work together effectively? And out of the blue, I just sent her a quick note on something and it came back. Oh, were your ears burning? So-and-so and I were just discussing the thing that you needed an update on. And I'm like, that's so funny. It's amazing. Thank you again for doing this. And it's great to see everybody. Thanks.
Thanks, Lynn. Judy.
Hi, Judy, compulsive overeater. Thank you. That was a great way to put the traditions into real life, because the traditions and the concepts are the things that I need a lot more understanding on. And I especially like you name your people on your little committee. You know, that's a great thing. And then I thought, well, I'll give them names of people like people that are in, and then I thought, no, don't do that. That's just going to cement the resentment in my head. So I'm going to find unique names to name them. And then I'm going to separate them like you did, and realizing they have your best interest in heart. That's really a very good way to look at it. Like, not bad, not good. They all want what's best for you, and just have a different way of expressing it. So thank you.
Thank you. Kim.
Hi, I'm Kim. I'm a compulsive overeater. Oh my gosh, Luann, that was so good. I so admire how you can like get that whole thing in your head like that. And I think, I can't do that. But I'm looking at these tiles here and I'm thinking, you know, I could draw out tiles and write those things, those parts of myself. And, you know, the spiritual principle of tradition three is identity. And with a eating disorder, I find that I completely have not, that was my identity. It was, what am I going to eat? How am I going to get rid of it? What am I going to do? And that was the whole identity. And as I moved from that eating disorder, there's a lot more parts to me than I thought were there. And I'm learning that there's, you know, little kids and there's, you know, defiant teenagers and there's bitter people and there's happy people. And yeah, I'm looking at these squares and I'm thinking I could do that, because when I've heard you talk about that, I wasn't able to like visualize it. But seeing these squares made me think, oh, I'll just write it out that way. I really like what you had to say today. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kim. Oh, I guess it's okay, Caroline.
I think I tried to do something to you. I'm sorry if I did. Co-host, I think I have power. And Carolyn, compulsive overeater. And I just love the image, you know, because I think in images like that. And I will never lose that. That's just such a gift for me to see that. I had heard a speaker before, and he talked about, you know, his committee would get going and it'd actually pull his, if he was driving, it'd pull his car over and get out and tell him he wasn't getting back into his car until they all shut up. It's like we're schizophrenic. And I just, oh my gosh, that's just such a gift. And looking at these traditions in those three areas to always remember, you know, I knew that we take the traditions into our relationships, that it works there too, but to see how you've broken down how to do it spiritually, I just love it. It's just awesome. And thank you so much for sharing and being here.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna jump in.
Okay, Janice, go for it.
Janice, compulsive overeater. So I just want to thank you as well, Luann. But I knew that it would be like this when you and I first talked. But what you said about so for identity, the only requirement for this relationship is a desire to be part of the relationship. I mean, that just, like for me, that just cements it all for applying that to being, to unifying my relationships and the ones that I want to be a part of, like my daughter and my grandchildren. And then the other part that you said about your son and his new wife, and, you know, like my grandson has a new partner that I'm not quite comfortable liking yet, but, you know, I love what you said, that, you know, to not do so would just push him away. And so I'm just really grateful for your sharing your experience with us this morning and or today, and how you've broken things down. So I'm looking forward to hearing about the next traditions. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else, or we can move on? Oh, no, Gina. Oh, you're still muted, Gina.
Well, hi, I'm Ginny. I'm a compulsive eater. Well, what is just the idea of unity? I was at one of my local group meetings this morning, and I took down three phone numbers. Have I called any of those people? No, not yet. And one of them is new. But remembering how important unity is, and also that first paragraph about how we've been isolated with our food, That's surely me. So I suppose I could, I don't know how to get the willingness to call people. It's so difficult. But just remembering how important it is. It's not about me, it's about the institution of OA, the organization of OA. So anyway, thank you for reminding us.
Thanks, Jeannie. Okay, should we move on to the next one? Unless anybody else has anything to share. We love hearing from people. Okay, tradition 4. Let me time myself. Tradition 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups as a whole. And the spiritual principle is autonomy. And we're responsible for ourselves and free to work or not work the 12 steps however we wish. There are no musts in OA. The same holds true for OA groups. Tradition 4 gives OA groups the right and responsibility to operate as they see fit, free from outside influences and freedom to make mistakes. It also means that no other group or service body can dictate group actions. There is only one limit to group autonomy. Groups should not do anything that will injure another OA group or OA as a whole. And tradition 4 challenges us as individuals, as OA groups, and as a fellowship to strike a healthy balance between our responsibility for ourselves and our responsibility for each other while we grow and work together as companions in recovery. And this is the hardest part. This is a hard tradition because I'm such a control freak. So, so autonomy, the definition is self-governing, and especially in a particular sphere, circle. So when I moved to, from Southern California to Northern California, it was hard because I go to a meeting up here and it wasn't the same as my meeting down in Southern California. And, I wanted to say that, you're not doing it right, and blah, 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 but nothing they were doing was going to hurt OA as a whole. And I just had to learn to just open up. What are things that a meeting is going to do that can hurt OA as a whole? And one big thing is to change the verbiage of the steps. There's a word in there. We all think God. I'm just going to say it. The word God makes people feel uncomfortable. But if a meeting decides to change the verbiage of a steps and try to remove that word, that affects OA as a whole, because OA, because unity wise, we need to operate from unity. This is a spiritual program. And the word God is just really just a symbol, because everybody, we all have a God of our own understanding. So we just use that word as a symbol. And if we take that word away, then that affects everybody in OA and as a whole. And I keep saying the same thing because I can't think about how to reword it, but we just can't put those musts, in it. I don't have much else to say about that for that. But what I do have to say is with my son and his daughter, his wife, this was really huge for our relationship, because they lived downstairs in their little apartment. We lived upstairs. And I had to really we say, well, they have their group, they're autonomous, and what they do, I had to give them the freedom to do what they needed to do if it didn't affect me. So for it, when they first moved here initially, they were some yelling and screaming with them, and we had to put a stop to that because it was affecting us. And so, and they listened. We sat down and had an adult conversation with a group conscious about how we're going to deal with this. And it worked out well. I didn't hear them yelling and screaming anymore. So I think I don't know what they did, but it didn't affect me. So I was good. So at one time they wanted to get a dog. It's like, no. But I was able to pull in another tradition to say no. And it was like, what's your primary purpose? That was, I don't know the traditions. You think I know these all by heart, but, and I'll get there for tradition 5, the next one. You know, what's your primary purpose of being here? It's like to get out of debt and get on your feet and being self-supporting. Not to get a dog. And plus it was going to affect me because they're going work and school, and I didn't want to have to take care of their dog. So so that was another thing that they had their autonomy, but that the decision of whether to get a dog or not was going to affect us, my husband and I. So we put a kibosh to that. So that's, you know, because of this tradition of autonomy, I gave them the space they needed instead of being bugging them like, your house is dirty. You need to do your dishes, because they aren't the tidiest people. So, okay. So how does this work for my spiritual committee? So I have to take care of myself emotionally, physically, and spiritually. And that means I have to carve out time in my day for these things. If I don't, then that's going to affect me emotionally and my unity within myself. And so it's important for me to have the autonomy without guilt and shame, because it's easy for me to feel like I'm being selfish if I go and take an hour and a half to do my step work and my meditation, and then I go exercise, and then I go to a meeting, and then I make phone calls, and then my poor husband, where am I going to leave him? You know what? I'm never going to talk to him again. And this, I'm being selfish and uncaring, but that's not true. So the autonomy for me personally comes with that this is the principle that I need so I can have a physical, emotional, and spiritual health, so that when I come to my family in the relationship, I can be present and not be in the head and thinking, you know, listening to those horrible, or listening to the voices that are really loud and squeaky, or thinking about food, or I'd rather be eating, you know. And so when the committee is talking to me and telling me that my husband's going to get mad, he's going to leave me. It took me 30 years, been married 34 years this month, 30 years of marriage before I realized that my husband isn't going to leave me. I had that fear that he was always going to divorce me for 30 years. It took that long time. So, but anyways, and it took doing, you know, working these traditions to realize that he has a desire to be in this relationship. He's not going anywhere, you know. When am I going to start trusting him? So, but it, you know, it took the traditions and this work to start believing it in that. So the other thing I love about this is tradition 4 is that it gives us the freedom. It gives me the freedom to make mistakes. It gives the freedom for my son to make a mistake, or my husband to make a mistake, or even a new OA meeting to make a mistake. That we don't always have to be right. I don't always have to be right. it's okay to be wrong. It's okay to change my mind. And that's the freedom of this tradition, is that we, you know, I have autonomy, I'm an individual, and I get to make a mistake and I get to fix it and change it if I want to. So that's tradition four. Oops. Okay. Tradition five. Each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who is still suffering. And the spiritual principle is purpose. Oh, set the timer. What did compulsive overeaters have many different solutions to solve our problems? You know, from books to diet clubs to medication to surgery. In the midst of all these solutions, OA offers a spiritual solution that has brought recovery to thousands of compulsive overeaters. Tradition five helps us keep it simple and not get sidetracked by many different solutions. We find focusing our primary objective, the spiritual solution, we are empowered to use our talents in ways that are useful to others. And we find the solution to our problems and a deep satisfaction in service as we join forces to share our recovery. And so that was me. I love books. I had a, you know, any book that promised me to stop eating or to have better relationships, I would buy them. I'd read the first paragraph and they'd go on my shelf, and I think I should had osmosis and be able to change just by having them on my shelf. So I like the idea that OA, it's just one solution. It's the spiritual solution. It's the steps, it's the traditions, it's the concepts. And if I stay with that, and I have for 5 years, it works. It has worked for me. And yes, every once in a while I go off and I buy a book, and then, you know, I have a few here that I haven't read, but I'm planning on it. But that's okay. But I still, the 12 steps is my basis. And I like that OA keeps it that way. Because then there's no other lure to distract me from the spiritual solution. So what's my primary purpose in my family and friends? So my primary purpose in my family and friends is to have healthy, loving relationships. And it's so much easier to get distracted by what other people are doing or not doing and get resentful at them for not doing things that are right, that aren't right, or I think they should be right, you know? And I love that, you know, someone said the set aside prayer earlier, and I love that because I use the set aside prayer every day because I need a new perspective, because my perspective isn't always the right perspective. And that, you know, the set aside prayer and this tradition reminds me that my primary purpose is to have healthy, loving relationships, not to make everybody do what I want them to do, or for me to shame them for not doing what's right or what I think is right. And so, you know, with regards to my son and his wife when they moved here, and, you know, it was an adjustment, you know, to have two young people move in here. And I had to kept reminding myself that my primary purpose is to maintain a healthy and loving relationship with these guys now and forevermore. And so it just kept me laser focused on our relationship so that it wouldn't get degraded. So the spiritual committee, what's my primary purpose for my spiritual committee is to have a healthy, loving relationship with myself. That this is where peace and unity really comes from, because when that inner voices get too much for me to handle, I can ask the question, really, what's the primary purpose of this committee? And the answer is always, oh, yeah, to have a healthy, loving relationship with myself. And so it really helps me pull everything together and not get distracted by the, you know, the guilt, the shame. It's like, no, let's do our committee work again. Let me get that unity back, you know, and let's listen to everybody so that I can have a healthy, loving relationship with myself. Because if I don't have that, I can't give it to anybody else. And I have to put the unity as a group, as a whole, so that I can have peace of mind. And so that's how I use that for tradition 5. Okay, let me go to tradition 6. Okay. Tradition 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, prestige divert us from our primary purpose, which is solidarity. Solidarity is the spiritual principle. So tradition 5 defines our primary purpose, which is, you know, I forgot. See, I'm getting brain freeze again. Primary purpose is to. Let me look. I'm so I'm getting flustered, you guys. Just to carry the message. OA's primary purpose, carry the message to still suffering OA, to still suffering compulsive overeaters. And tradition 6, make sure we stick to that principle. But no matter how many outside enterprises might interest us as an individual, that we find ourselves or the OA group embroiled in problems if money, property, and prestige gets involved. And this diverts our resources from our primary purpose if we do let money, property, and prestige get involved in anything. So this tradition brings safety to our meetings, and because it's so easy to bring in outside issues, because there's so many good books out there, good sayings, good teachers out there, spiritual leaders that have so many wise things to say, poetry. But it's okay to read. I read a lot of outside literature. It's okay to do that. But inside the room, we gotta keep it simple, and we have to maintain just what OA has approved for to keep us connected, so we don't get distracted on anything, on any outside issues. So. Because we can do anything we want outside of OA rooms. We can, you know, give service to other communities, give money, you know, give talks, just as long as it doesn't affect OA as a whole. So how does this tradition work with my family and friends? Oops. Well, this is the hard part. My son and his wife didn't have any money when they moved here, right? So my husband and I did not, it was hard not to give him any money, not to tell him, you know, what to do and everything, but we didn't give him any money. Our service was giving them a safe place to live. That was our primary purpose. If we had given them any money, if we had given them, we would have had problems. If we endorsed too, that was another thing. You know, how many times I see a job, you know, a job opening somewhere, and I want to like, oh, let me go knock on there. Hey, I have a son. Can you hire him? You know, I can't endorse my kid. I did that when he was a teenager, trying to find him a job. I can't endorse him for anything, and I can't finance him anything, you know. Because that doesn't allow that goes against our primary purpose of having a healthy relationship and his autonomy. And so they had to work. They had to go out and start finding jobs and start working. And, you know, they didn't eat very well. I mean, I fed them, but I didn't go way out of my way to make sure that I had healthy meals for everybody every day. Cause it's like, no, you guys got to figure this out. I'm providing you with a safe place for you to get jumpstart back up. So, and I'm so glad I did, because they're doing great now. And I think if I gave them money, if I endorsed stuff for them, and they wouldn't be where they are now. So, and, you know, regarding to the spiritual committee, I really don't have any examples of this tradition in my spiritual committee. So with that, I think I'm going to stop it here. I'm going to open up again for questions, shares, or what anybody likes to do. So okay. Well, we can keep moving forward then. Okay. Tradition seven. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Spiritual principle is responsibility. So tradition seven is set to fulfill our primary purpose and to remain free from outside influences. You know, that goes back to tradition six. So saying no to outside contributions and saying yes to our responsibility as a group and individual is a vital principle for responsibility. It frees the fellowship of complications that would inevitably arise were we dependent on outside resources. And when we honor this tradition, we gain self-respect that comes from being self-supporting. And if we took on outside contributions or then there might be some contingencies along with that. You know, well, I'm giving you so much money, you should be doing this now. So we don't want, as an OA as a whole, we rather, OA's tradition is to lean on God for our security and rather than other people. And so using the guidance of our higher power, we learn to do things and we learn to take care of ourselves and our group materially and emotionally. If the meeting can't support itself on its own contributions, then we might need to look at it that maybe that's God's direction, that it's not the right time to keep a meeting going. So that doesn't mean we don't ask for help. Tradition seven, we begin to see more clearly what our boundaries need to be, and we begin to share our vulnerabilities with other people without expecting others to shoulder our responsibility. And so with family and friends, with these traditions, I wanted my son to learn how to be self-supporting, he and his wife to be self-supporting. And so that's why I didn't give him any money or anything, because if I did, he wouldn't get the feeling of responsibility and self-respect that he needed, and his wife too. And so there was a point, well, this is another story. So how does this look for the spiritual committee? responsibility and self-supporting. So for many years, I had expected other people to fix my problems, you know, working these traditions with my spiritual committee has encouraged me to take my problems to God instead of taking them to other people and hoping that they would have the right words or the right, you know, phrase that's going to flip a switch and I'm magically going to be pain-free. It doesn't happen that way. So tradition seven for me is that I have to be self-supporting and responsible for my program. Then that means I had to get up every morning. I had to sit in my chair here and do my writing, do my prayers, do my meditation, do my step work. That's my responsibility. That's my self-supporting by my own contributions towards my recovery. And then the results are left to God. And so this tradition seven is a huge part of why I do my program is for that self-supporting and responsibility part. So, okay, tradition eight. I'm going to take a deep breath here, you guys, because I'm starting to get a little flustered. And a drink of water. Okay, tradition eight. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. The spiritual principle is fellowship. OA meetings are always built on fellowship of sharing experience, strength, and hope. We are a service to each other and we do it for fun and for free. We don't get paid for any of our service work and our reward is our own personal recovery. At intergroup level, in region, in world service, there are some paid positions due to the natures of the job and the expectations that a volunteer could not manage. Our two has hired a bookkeeper to manage our finances. The region board has hired a bookkeeper to manage our finances because it's too big of a job for a volunteer position. And so, but we still have a treasurer to oversees that the bookkeeper. We also have a webmaster that we hire to oversee the web, our website. And so, and then we have the publication coordinator position kind of oversees that too. So, but this tradition reminds us that we're non-professional. Every single one of us, unless they're a paid position, we're a non-professional. And that means that when we're sponsoring, we're not meant to fix our sponsees. I have to always remind myself of this because I just, you know, I have such a, I want to help people. I have a heart that wants to be of service and I want to fix people. So I had to remember, I can't fix people. I can't help them. They have to be self-supporting for part of, you know, they have, I can be a light, but they have to be self-supporting. They have to work on their tradition seven and work their program. So, so sponsors, we're not therapists. I'm not a dietitian. I can't tell my sponsees what to eat and what not to eat. I recommend them to go to see a dietitian, you know, go see a professional because I'm not a professional. I was a professional hairdresser. And I was professional in the medical field, but you know, other than that, I'm not a professional. So I just put my hand in yours because I care, and that's what this tradition eight is about. Is that, you know, it's a fellowship, and we do this because we care. So family and friends, how does this work for family and friends? So, like I said, I have a real big desire to help people. And there's always the line between friendship and helping and the professional. And what's the professional line? And it isn't everything. It is a balance in life. And so I find that I can get caught up in myself and helping other people to the point where I compromise my values. And I'll push myself under the bus in order to help somebody. But then I get resentful. And so, yeah. So when my kids were living here, now my daughter-in-law is my kid. I love her that much. I just call her my kid. It's just easier. And but I had to keep reminding myself that I'm not a professional financial planner. So I couldn't sit there and tell them how to plan their money, how to organize it, what they should spend it on, what they shouldn't, because sometimes I was like, why did you not buy that? So, but I had to remind myself, I'm not a professional. So, and I'm not a professional housekeeper. So I, even though there was part of their space downstairs that was, that we used to, I wasn't willing to go and clean their stuff up, even though I had to look at it every day for a year and a half. But I'm like, no, I'm not a professional housekeeper. So so there again, I had to keep honoring this tradition. So, another example is my mom got to the point where she couldn't pay her bills anymore. So I had to pay her bills. So I had insight of what her spending was and what she was doing and how she was spending her money and who she was giving it to. And I had to keep telling myself, nope, my primary purpose is to pay her bills. I'm not a professional CPA. I don't have to give her advice. I'm not a financial planner. My primary purpose is just to pay her bills. And it kept us going. You know, if I started nagging her about what she's spending her money on and stuff, our unity and our loving relationship would have gone down the pot, down the crapper. So, but I had to keep reminding myself, what's my primary purpose? Just to pay her bills. So, okay, so spiritual committee. There is no voice in my head that has authority over me. There is no voice in my head that's a professional that can tell me what to do and how to do it. And then each voice that shows up to the committee meeting are non-professional, and they only can share their experience, strength, and hope. It's my action plan to listen and to gain understanding to each voice's solution is to the dilemma. And then I take it to God. So, but I don't have to listen to those voices. And so that was huge when I realized that I have the freedom to say, wait a minute, you're not a professional. I don't have to listen to you. I didn't hire you. You know, I'm not paying you to take care of my books, take care of my head, you know? So I'm going to listen and see what you have to say. And then I'm going to take it to my higher power. So, so that's how that works for my spiritual committee. Okay. One more, and then we'll open it up for shares or questions. And so tradition 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible for those that we serve. The spiritual principle is structure. And so in OA, the structure, a power structure is the triangle, right? So the person up here, the CEO, he's the one that everybody under here, the bottom part of the triangle, everything they do is towards him, right? The CEO of the company, that we're a service to him. OA, the service structure is opposite. So the point is down here, and then the bottom of the triangle is on top, and that's where the groups are. These the groups, that's where the power is. It's not down here where the pinpoint is. So that pinpoint, the World Service Office is the pinpoint. Their job is to work and do what the meetings and the individuals want way up here. And so that's the difference between a power structure and a service structure. And so Tradition 9 encourages us to remain as free as possible from bureaucracy that tends to form around the power structure organizations. Because when this happens, the organizations and administration takes on a life of their own. Oops. Tradition 9 is geared towards our primary purpose of carrying that message to the message based on our spiritual principles. And in OA, we have experience how things work from outside, from work out of the best. I'm sorry, I'm reading this. In OA, we experience how things work out for the best when we keep our organization down to a minimum. The order we once sought out from structure and rules, we found freedom instead. And so we now can take responsibility for our shared lives, which is unity in Tradition 1, and OA fellowship in which we recover together. So So all the meetings, all the individuals, you and I, and every person that we know that goes and sits in these chairs, everybody, the bureaucracy, the intergroups, it's not even bureaucracy. Intergroup is working for those groups. Region board, our job on the board is to help the intergroups so they can help the meeting level. And then same World Service is there to help the regions, and the regions help the intergroup, and the intergroup is there to help the meeting level. So it's a service structure, and there's no bureaucracy whatsoever. So how does this work in family and friends? And wow. This has been really big, because when I've changed my attitude as a service attitude instead of as a power structure, but as a service, then it frees me. I don't have to sit there and be controlling anymore. And my families don't get mad at me like they used to. So because now I it's like, what can I do to help you? And I find my husband has been doing the same thing back to me now. He's not a 12-stepper. But the more I've asked him, and it's a funny story, it started, my sponsor had asked me to, my husband eats peanuts every night. And so she said, well, why don't you be a service to him and get his peanuts? I'm like, do I have to? So, and he didn't want me to. And it was really hard for both of us to switch to that service structure. But I had to tell him, I said, my sponsor told me to do this, just let's try it for a week. So so for a week, I'm like, okay, can I get your peanuts for you? So I would get his peanuts. And eventually he started liking it. He's like, oh, can you get my peanuts for me? But it was a start for me to learn how to be of service, because I would be the one that be sitting there with my feet up in the chair and like, oh, can you get me a glass of water? He'd be just as comfortable as I am, but like, get me a glass of water, you know? And so it's been really a beautiful thing to be able to switch to be service oriented instead of power structure. So okay, so how does this work in my committee, in my spiritual committee? When my committee is in session, I start feeling a bit chaotic, and I have to always ask myself, what kind of structure am I trying to operate from? And it's usually a power structure that causes the chaos inside myself. And my emotional sobriety, it starts to falter when this happens. And then they get full of fear and unhappy. And then I try to control more. And there is a power structure. So the more I try to control, the less self-loving I have and self-acceptance. And it becomes a vicious cycle. So it's imperative for me to continue working closely with my spiritual committee, which includes God. That's always, he's always there, in order for me to stay emotional stable. And it's, we share the responsibility for peace and serenity within myself. So when I put rules around myself and I put a lot of shoulds and things that I need to do and I have to do by a certain time, or I can't walk and listen to a meeting at the same time, or, you know, any kind of rules, you know, I have to eat by 5. I used to do this before a program. I have to eat by 5. If I don't eat by 5, then all hell would break loose and I would just go start shoving food in my mouth, because I am so rule oriented and I'm so overly responsible that once I say something, I feel like I have to follow through whether I want to or not. And that's where I'm learning that autonomy, that I'm allowed to make mistakes and change my mind. But when I start getting chaotic, I start realizing, oh, I'm starting to push things, starting to get in that power structure, and that's going to start dominating things. So I just need to stop and ask the committee, how can I help? And then usually what I hear is it's time to relax and maybe play a little, have a little fun, go for a walk, and or just breathe or just meditate, you know. So it's in order to keep my freedom, then I just have to look at the structure that I'm trying to live by. And that's, you know, to live by all these traditions, they're also intertangled, they're intertwined with each other. It's just not one or the other, because it's amazing how they all kind of tie in together. Each tradition is just like a little thread that you're just going to look at. But when you put it all together, it's a really beautiful quilt. So, okay, so that's it for those. I'm going to open it up for shares and questions. So anybody, any responses? Oh, Caroline.
Hi, Caroline, Pulsive Overeater. The question that I did have with Tradition 7, isn't there a maximum donation you can make? I was curious.
Oh, I'm sorry. Finish your question.
Oh, I was just curious what that was.
I off the top of my head, I want to say it's $1,500 a year. And that's why they do that. Anything more than that, then you're going to start getting into the, well, I've given you this so much money, you got to do it this way. So,
yeah, I just wasn't sure in a way. I know they do that in other 12-step programs.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Kim.
Kim, compulsive overeater. So I'm looking at Tradition 9. This is great, Luann. Thank you so much. It's so good to hear this review, really. It's so good. I'm just going to grab a question from Tradition 9. Does our group support those who do service, or are we critical of them and suspicious of their motives? So I've been in program a long time, and this time of this pandemic, really, my gosh, there were, like, if you were expecting me to put together all this Zoom stuff, it would have never happened. We would be sitting by ourselves, you know, reading our literature. And there were people who could do this technology or that had the desire to do it. And I did hear some, a little bit of criticism as that was going on, you know, or how things were going. But generally, it seemed like people kind of, we all kind of supported it and tried to make the best of it. And boy, good things have come out of it, like this. I mean, I don't know where all of you are. I'm in Southern California, but this is fantastic that we can all, you know, be at this workshop and or be at meetings. I've been at meetings all over the world, and that's amazing. It would have never happened if, like I say, I couldn't do that. And I'm really grateful for that. The people that have done that service. And if I think about in my family, or family and friends, critical and suspicious. I have an eating disorder and I have codependency issues. So, you know, critical and suspicious. Yeah. And I've had plenty of people critical and suspicious of me. And that does not build within the traditions a loving atmosphere. Critical and suspicious, the committee in my head. Oh my gosh, I've always been critical and suspicious of myself. This is my big work as I you know, rack up more years in this program. My big work has been, because the food has settled down, my big work is to find a loving relationship with myself and not be so critical and not be so suspicious. I haven't trusted myself. And yeah, this is a really nice thing to hear today. Thank you so much, Lou Anne.
Thanks, Kim. Kat, you're up.
Oh, hi, this is Kat, a compulsive eater. I've just been cleaning my dad's house and listening as I go. And I've just really enjoyed it. And so I just didn't want you to think I was just a stalker sitting here. And being suspicious of myself, wow, that is just like something I can relate to and I've never thought of before. And all these things like, oh, I have the desire to get along with my mother-in-law because she's a trial in my life. And all these things are really going to help me in my life. And, you know, it's like pretty much our tradition meetings are just how they work around meetings. And this is so much more life-giving. And then maybe I can pump in some life into our tradition meetings. So just have really enjoyed it and your share and everyone's comments too. So thank you. And I'm off the air.
Thanks, Kat.
Luann, do you want to take 5 minutes for yourself?
Yeah, that would be a good idea. Just like,
yeah,
do a little stress break. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take 5 minutes and I'll set the timer.